Welcome to a special prospect interview on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed and the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel. I'm Maxwell Baumbach, and today I'm joined by Evansville's Ben Humbrickhaus. Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Hey, thank you for having me on here.
Yeah, no problem. It's an absolute pleasure. You were a guy that's kind of been on my radar for a little while here. You had a really hot start to the college season and caught my eye early on in the year just because of that. And I, you know, not to be, you know, rude or anything, but a lot of times the guy has a hot start and you just kind of keep tabs on him. You're like, is this guy going to sustain this kind of production? And you've done that. So I've been one of my favorite under the radar players and sleepers. Ben Humbrickhaus from Evansville is definitely a guy you want to have on your radar. So Ben, the first thing I always like to ask players is, what is the thing that got you into basketball growing up?
Growing up, originally, I just liked playing sports. My mom and dad said that whenever it just came with, like, whether it was basketball, baseball, football, whatever, I enjoyed it and I loved doing it and I did it with everything I had. So eventually, I was actually always a baseball kid. And when I got into high school, I was just 6'7", 6'8". And I'd always loved basketball, but that's when I started to really sprout and really love the game and chase it.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And you are kind of like one of those out of nowhere guys where prior to this year, it didn't seem like, at least I didn't know anyone that was like really on top of your game or anything like that. You spent some time at Huntington mm-hmm. prior to your time at Evansville. So not a Division I basketball program. What was your prep career like? And then what was your recruitment like coming out of high school that kind of led you there instead of like going straight to a D1?
Yeah. So out of high school, I only played one summer of AAU, and that was right before my senior year. And that was, a good experience for me, but I just didn't have any really true recruitment. And then right before my senior year, I went and played in the senior showcase with Prep Hoops. And that was my first time really playing in front of any coaches. I had met Huntington that day, their coaching staff and Bethel and such. So not really highly recruited out. I had 3 NAIA offers, and then I had an offer at Incarnate Word in San Antonio.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. So when it kind of came down to just, Huntington was 1 hour and 10 from my home. Mm-hmm. It was close to home. There was a great opportunity there. They had just hired a new staff and Coach Corey Alford and his people, and they were just people I trusted. It was a great opportunity. And so they had everything I wanted, and I got to go to school for free and play basketball. So
can't beat that. Hard to complain about that. So, So you mentioned like only playing one summer of AAU. So were you like, I don't want to say like a late bloomer as far as like your basketball production, or was it like a small town situation where you just weren't getting a lot of eyes on you? Like, how did that sort of like snowball?
Yeah. So I always wanted to play AAU just because I had a bunch of friends that did. But as I mentioned, I was a baseball kid.
That's
and
right.
During the summers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm one of 6 kids. And so my parents' rule was that we could only play one at a time. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want me to run around with basketball and baseball.
Yeah.
Just because of time stuff. And so when it came down to it, I just kept chasing baseball until, the summer before my senior year. And that's when I mm-hmm. dove into AAU.
And being one of that many siblings, like where do you kind of fall in the pecking order age wise? Like, are you toward the middle, top, bottom, or?
I'm the second. I have an older sister and four little brothers.
Man, that's a lot. Do you feel like that shaped, like you as a basketball player in any way, or at least your approach to the game or life or anything like that?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of where my competitive drive came from. There's no one you really want to beat more than just your little brother. Mm-hmm. I think that was also where I found the love just to play sports, whether it was wiffle ball in the backyard, basketball, or just throwing the football around. I think it was just sports like that were just always doing something you love, and that's where mm-hmm. It was really the most fun. So
for sure. So you have 3 successful kind of seasons at Huntington, and we're going to touch on that a little bit later, but just to kind of bring people up to speed to where you are currently, you transferred into Evansville this past offseason. When you made that decision, you decided that you were going to look at transferring up. What was it about Evansville that kind of sold you and made you want to go there?
Yeah. So right out of the portal, for most people that understand the portal, it's pretty crazy. I had played Evansville in an exhibition game with Huntington, And so I had already kind of played in front of him, but I had some connections to Coach Snow through my Huntington staff. I had some connections with Coach Wilson. And so in the transfer portal, it really came down to where could I find people that I trusted.
Yeah.
And early on, I found in the coaching staff that there was a bunch of people that I really could trust. They showed really good interest in me, and they were great through the whole process. And when it came down to, like, when I went on my visit, it came down to finding, like, I hung out with a group of guys that returned. And they were just, I mean, really a great family. There was a great culture behind the people that returned. And so, I mean, it was honestly an easy decision. When I came home, I was on the drive home with my mom and my dad for my visit. And my mom looked at me and she's like, why haven't we committed already? And so it was, after I'd gone on my visit, it was a fairly easy decision. So
for sure. That's your tier. And I think that's something that's important for players out there listening to consider too. Is I had a conversation with Spencer Jones at Stanford, who elected to return to Stanford for his grad year. And something that he mentioned was that for him, it was fear of kind of what you talked about, like having a coaching staff that you trust and knowing, hey, like at Stanford, I know these guys, I trust these guys. So when you are looking to switch programs, like having those coaching connections and knowing that you're going into a trusting environment, you can believe in the coaching staff and they're going to believe in you, it's really important. So I commend Absolutely. You for taking that into account. And obviously it's paid off for everybody. Looking into your stats during your time at Huntington, it looked like it was sort of a steady progression in a sense. Like you're just a little bit better every year. So just like from the outside looking in, as someone who studies the smaller conferences and things like that a lot, generally when guys transfer up, they don't get better, they get worse. Your numbers have continued to improve at a Division I program after transferring up, which is very uncommon. What do you attribute that to? It seems like every year your role has just been a little bit bigger, you've been a little bit more efficient. How has that happened?
I attribute it to two things. The first one would probably just be overall confidence. I think that my Huntington years were great because I grew a ton, not just as a basketball player, but as a person. And there were a lot of things that in the transition helped improve my confidence. I tell a lot of people about this, but there's just this simple, I had this simple journal where every day I keep track of what I do, but I even started counting my shots. I'm such a number analytics. My undergraduate degree was in mathematics. I'm just such a numbers guy that when you can see the tangible numbers about what you're working and putting in, it's a big confidence thing. And so walking into coming here, I just always want to pride myself in efficient shooting or an efficient game. And so like looking into a game, I know that I've made shots and stuff. So there was a bunch of stuff like that, a bunch of mental work that I did over the summer, just in the way that I trained. But then the second thing, I just think it's a big God thing. If you learn about me, my faith is incredibly important to me. And by the grace of God, he's given me abilities that and he's given, putting me in circumstances and opportunities that I couldn't account for or take credit for. And so it's a big confidence thing, but it's really a big God thing. So
absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great answer. You mentioned that kind of like that well-roundedness and that efficiency. And that's something that, I mean, we're talking numbers. That's my world. I love that stuff. In kind of preparation for this and digging into the film for this, I, you know, obviously went to your Synergy page and you get used in so many different types of possessions. They use you as a spot-up guy. You make plays in transition. You run ball screens both as a screener and as a ball handler. You do a little bit of everything and you grade out really well across the board. How did you develop that sort of well-roundedness? Has that sort of always been your approach to the game? Have you always had coaches that asked you to do a wide variety of things? Or was there one thing that you started off being good at and then you expanded it out from there?
Yeah. So growing up, I was, because of my age, I was always younger. So I wasn't actually as big as most of my the kids in my class. And so I grew up as a guard. I grew up shooting the three ball. As I've developed over time, I've always kind of had those guard skills that have allowed me to, whether it's go in a ball screen, push the ball in transition, make plays off the dribble. But then as I got into Huntington and, scouts start to change and you start to realize that sometimes the best way to get open is to screen.
Absolutely.
Just the simple idea that my ability to screen has gotten me open, or my ability to pick and pop, especially in the league like the NBC, can be a huge treasure to use, and is a huge advantage. And so, I mean, I credit a bunch of people to that, just whether it was film sessions, but also just working with my trainer at home over the summers. We just developed a bunch of things. Just, I mean, with my size at my position, I have a lot of freedom to kind of go small and go in the three position, but even try to be big and be more of a five man. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Because at your size, 6'9", strong, sturdy build, you know, pick and pop is going to be something you see a lot at the next level. But even like when I interviewed Justin Powell this offseason, who's on the Canton Charge G League team now, and something that he mentioned was just like, you got to screen to get shots at the NBA level. And he's more of like a guard at 6'5". And that's just the nature of the game now. Like if you're not screening and willing to screen and setting good screens, it gets a lot harder to get those looks at the next level. So that is something that's really important. Obviously the shot is something that, like, for me, that was a big thing that drew me to your tape initially, was seeing, hey, this guy is 6'9" and he's shooting like 44% from three. As of this recording, so we're recording this about a week before this will be released. Currently, you're taking 5.1 threes per game. You're making 43.7% of them. So really good volume and really good efficiency for a guy who is your size. You mentioned the three being a part of your game growing up. But again, this is one of those areas where the percentage has kind of ticked up over time. Is that just a reps thing, or have there been any kind of mechanical footwork, like, How have you gotten to a point where you're hitting this many on this high of a clip?
Yeah. My shooting coach was always my dad, and okay, I don't know if I want him to watch this and get credit for that, but I think it was just the fundamentals. When it comes to just the structure and the fundamentals of my shot, I don't think much has changed growing up. I think that, I mean, for a lot of great shooters, it just starts with a good foundation. I mean, I talk about the confidence thing. I think that there's a lot of mental, there's a huge mental side to shooting the ball. And I think that most of my development in becoming a high level shooter is just improving your mental game and getting the repetitions and putting yourself, like in my workouts, just putting yourself in difficult circumstances. And like, I mean, Coach P has this drill. It's you gotta make 42 out of 50 or more. And 42 out of 50 or more is 84% from three. And that's a really high percentage. And I mean, let's say you fail and you shoot 39. I mean, I'm still shooting at 78% on the drill. And so it's kind of just, it's that idea that, like, pushing what you're able to do. And you just, I mean, when you fail, you're still succeeding. So.
Absolutely. And I know you mentioned like your shot, like, your journaling process and sort of tracking your shots and things like that. With that, are you looking at taking different types of threes during those workouts, or is it more stationary stuff? Like, how do you, like, what's your process as far as going through a workout and working on your three?
Yeah. It's not really just contained to the 3-point jump shot. It's a good mix of spot ups, whether mid range or 3-point. I think the mid range is important more for development, than anything, but it's one dribble pull ups in the mid range. It's turnarounds in the mid range. But then also the 3-point sidestep, spot up, transition. So it's a big combination of a bunch of different shots. So,
And obviously you are, I mean, we're going to get to kind of some of that in between and like ball handling stuff too. But you're a really efficient finisher as well. You're a guy who can kind of get up above the rim, too, which is good. You got some good bounce to you. How important is your shooting from that standpoint? And how do you kind of decide when you get the ball in the perimeter, like, hey, here's a good time to pump fake it and drive in versus here's one that I'm just going to let fly?
A lot of time it can be a combination of the closeout, but also a combination of time and score. If I'm missing, like, let's say early in the game, I take a three early and I miss the first two, I might be quicker to say, let's get to the rim. And because, I mean, that's a high percentage of getting fouled. And sometimes just making free throws makes the three ball much easier to shoot. And so I think it's a combination of time and score, but even just how I'm shooting, how I'm doing. And I mean, if seeing the ball go in a game can help be a big confidence booster for taking the next big three.
Absolutely. And you are also, I mean, I know you mentioned kind of growing up as a guard a little bit more. you are this, you know, polished playmaker. You are in the 97th percentile on synergy right now as a pick and roll ball handler, which is, again, just something that's not very common for a dude your size. When you are kind of going through that process, and also assist to turnover ratio looking real good at 1.8-1 right now too. When you are kind of putting the ball on the deck in a ball screen, what are you looking for on the court? Because obviously you are a guy who can pull up, take it to the rack. Like, what are you looking for? And then how are you kind of reacting based on what you're seeing?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of can talk about the X's and O's a bunch. I mean, to make it the most simple is watch the roll. Who's the tag guy? That would probably be the first read. Sometimes, a lot of times I end up with four and five big man pick and rolls, which is very uncommon. It's very uncommon that a four man gets put as guarding the ball in a pick and roll. And so I have a big advantage, whether it's for me or for the guy setting the screen. And so, I mean, first instinct is coming off the screen, read the tag. And after that, it's really trying to get downhill and just trying to make plays at the rim. So,
yeah, that's great. That's great. Let's talk about your defense a little bit. One of the things that really stands out, and just the more film I watch, especially NBA games and things like that, is just the importance of size and not just being tall, but being long and being strong. Can you talk about how those elements of just your physical profile tend to help you out on that end of the floor?
Yeah, absolutely. A stat that doesn't end up really getting recorded in our games is just deflections and how important deflections is to the disruption of the offense, even if it doesn't happen in it to become a steal or such. My ability just to use my wingspan can cause a lot of deflections, or even just the simple idea that with me using all my wingspan, it causes a higher skip pass or something of that nature. And ultimately, I might, on-ball defender, I might not end up with a block, but just the ability to wall up, my height and my wingspan allows me to just contest shots to the best ability. And then, I mean, just me being a four man or whatever, I'm still developing my ability to guard on ball, which is at the NBA level, a huge skill that people are looking for. So that's something that continues to develop, but even just my ability to guard inside, my frame has continued to develop every year. I mean, I walked in my freshman year at 6'7", 175 pounds. And, just an importance on continuing to strength train and stuff has made my defensive game so much better from the start. So,
for sure. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And it's one of those things that shows up on film as far as your ability to contain the ball. But I also really like your ability to help with the rim as a weak side rim protector with how you get off the floor. Maybe a bit of an odd question, but do you think your time kind of playing as a guard and getting to see how plays unfold and things like that, do you think that that's helped you on the defensive end as far as being able to read what the opposing offense is doing and knowing when guys are kind of going to make a break at the rim?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a bunch of defense is just defensive instincts and just anticipation. For me, one of the things that I'm continuing to watch on film is just my positioning. If I can be in the right spot at the right time, it helps me a whole lot more than trying to overcompensate and do more than I have to. And so, I mean, I've guarded a lot of guards growing up, and it makes being the second defender much easier, whether I'm blocking the shot at the rim or reading a kick out or something. So, yeah, definitely has helped.
For sure. And just kind of looking forward as far as your game goes, you've kind of gotten better year over year. Is there anything in your game that you look at and you say, man, this is the one thing I'm really focused on, or this is the one area of my game that I really want to get better? Or are you still just kind of continuing to take that more holistic approach and just want to see an overall well-rounded improvement, just kind of take those steps forward?
Yeah. The one thing would probably be the mid post, my ability to create in the mid post, just because I had always played a guard. I played so much on the perimeter. I'm starting to find that I get not just getting open through screening, but even getting open just through in transition, pushing to the mid post or mid post catches. There's a lot of opportunities in there to be a good passer, to be able to see the floor well, but even just to get around the rim and get fouled, make plays out of the mid post. And so that's probably right now, it's not something that I was always super confident and comfortable in, but it's something that I'm continuing to develop and I mean, use to make plays. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I always like to kind of just ask guys, I think it's a good way for people to kind of get to know you. I know you mentioned, you know, mathematics and things like that earlier. Whenever basketball is all said and done, whenever you, you know, retire after pro career or whatever, what do you want to do after that?
I say data analytics. I love basketball analytics. Mm-hmm. I have such a mind for it. My Huntington coach, Coach Corey Alford, our system was ran so heavy on the analytics. That's something that's super interesting to me. Just even as the game develops and as that field grows, mm-hmm. that would probably, I mean, I want to stay in basketball because I'm a little kid still, but
yeah, absolutely.
Even when I get older, I want to stay in basketball because I'm still a little kid. So mm-hmm. That just loves the game. And so probably something like that.
That's great. Love that. And this obviously the same boat as you, you know, with that basketball dream. So where can people find you if they want to kind of follow along on your journey here?
Like social media and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have an Instagram page. I don't know if this is possible. You just tag me or something. I'm on Instagram,
yep.
Twitter. I have a fairly lame TikTok that I'm still on. Yeah, and then something that's growing is my Facebook. I'm starting to get old, so I'm starting to add my Facebook a little bit.
There we go. Love that. Well, I appreciate you joining us here. Make sure you're giving Ben a follow. An absolute pleasure to have you on the show here. So make sure you're following him on all social media platforms. Make sure you're following us at No Ceilings NBA on all platforms. And make sure you're following me at Boundboards. Until next time, thank you for joining us.